Good morning, Colorado. Here we go. Y'all ready for this? The Bell and Pollack Legal Show. Gary Bell, Bob Leonard of the law firm of Bell and Pollack. We're right here live in the studio to take your calls and answer your questions on any legal subject. We're injury attorneys in our day lives, but right here on the radio and our radio lives, we're here for you on any legal subject. It doesn't matter. It can be landlord-tenant, wills, estates, divorces, custody. We're here to help you. If we can't do it, we're going to refer you to an attorney who can do it, but most of the time we can solve your problems, and we get back to you during the week also and help you solve your problems and look at your papers and analyze the situation. Sometimes that's very refreshing, and sometimes that's all you need. If you need to be referred to another attorney, we do it, and we do it for free. We do this radio show for free. Why? To help you, to give you the information you need. It dawned on Brad and I years ago that people come into our office time and time and time again, and they don't have the information. They don't have, and they didn't have at a critical time, the information they needed. But usually, and in our business, the adversary, the insurance company, they always had the information. They always had the training. They always had the knowledge. Their adjusters have the knowledge. They have computer courses, training courses, mentors, supervisors, doctors, lawyers, engineers. You know, we've discovered over the years that some of these insurance companies have doctors right down the hallway. They have lawyers, experienced attorneys, litigation trial lawyers, insurance lawyers right down the hallway on call. Some of them do the cases. Some of them farm it out to the outside firms. Our telephone number right here, 303-713-8255. That's 713-8255 to get your eyes open a little bit wider this morning. When you're in an accident and somebody, if the at-fault party has, let's say, Farmers or State Farm or Safeco or Hartford, those insurance companies have their own law firms in Denver, other cities as well, across the state of Colorado as well, that they give the cases to. Some of these law firms are deemed to be employees of the insurance company. Some are not. Some are outside counsel, but they hand them all their cases. So maybe insurance company XYZ might give one law firm 900 cases a year, 2,000 cases a year. That's where the case goes. These lawyers are not just assigned to these cases by mistakes. Certain law firms in Denver, and Brad and Bob and I know who they are, handle all the cases for XYZ Company. And XYZ Company might have four law firms to handle them. But they've got their own finite set of law firms, right, that handle these injury questions, injury cases. They defend them. They do it time and time again. So the point is, one of the points is, who do you have? What's your training? What's your knowledge? And so 303-713-8255. So to show you the genesis of this whole thing, so years ago at Dondon, Brad and I, that people don't have the information. They're not protected. They're being taken advantage of. How do we get them the information? Then the idea years ago morphed and evolved into this show. If people don't have the information in our injury field, then they don't have the information generally, right? So we developed this show. It's free for you, 303-713-8255. We're talking live to Don and Morrison right now. Good morning, Don.
Gentlemen,
what can we do for you?
Renter's insurance. I'm a landlord.
Right.
And I've heard it suggested that tenants should be required to have renter's insurance with me as a landlord named on the policy. But I don't really understand why. Just read an article yesterday on some Zillow thing that showed up on my phone automatically, suggesting that was also correct. So I thought I'd call you guys.
Well, I'm glad you called, because we had a caller a few weeks ago, maybe not even that long, but a few weeks ago, that wanted to hold the landlord responsible for the dog, the next door neighbor's dog who was a tenant. The tenant's dog tore up their fence, damaged their fence, and they wanted to make a claim against the landlord. That's one. Another one is you have a tenant, Don, in your property, whatever, let's say it's a house, let's say it's an apartment, whatever, or a condominium, and somebody's going to be responsible for the snow and ice on the sidewalk, and somebody gets injured. let's say it's a house, somebody's on the sidewalk, they don't, who owns the property, who's responsible under the premises liability statute for the injuries. And so if you have a provision in your lease to have the tenant name the landlord as an additional insured, protected, and you have your own insurance, landlord's insurance, so then you're going to be protected from situations like that. And so that's two of the easiest examples that come to mind. But
the level of insurance, if I might, that they would have, I was told by a buddy in the real estate biz, was that maybe it's $20,000 to cover their personal contents, and it didn't make sense to him that the landlord would benefit in any appreciable way if there was a fraud. And I suggested, what if they caused a fire and burnt the house down? So what kind of protection might there be that would keep me from maybe making a claim for, let's say, didn't burn it down, but, you know, burnt up one room and $60,000 worth of damage? Would renter's insurance assist the landlord recovering that way?
You know, you asked some great questions, because the answer, here's the attorney dodge, right? The answer is possibly, but and the reason is, what does the policy say? I mean, what do the endorsements say? So it's like, is it for contents only? Is it for renter's personal property only? Or is there an endorsement to protect the landlord from natural catastrophes, from fire damage, water damage, wind damage, and then to personal injury? So yes, the answer is yes. It would benefit the landlord immensely. And you know, to morph over into another area, Don, when you get to a commercial situation, and somebody's going to open up a shop in Park Meadows, well, they're going to enter into a lease, and the landlord's going to say you're going to maintain insurance in the following ways: for property damage, X dollars; for personal injury, $3 million. And you're going to name us, the landlord, the owner of Park Meadows, as an additional insured. So that concept would morph right over into you or me leasing out a piece of property.
You know, also, Gary, gives the landlord some rights. They've notified if there's a lapse of insurance, it's canceled. Otherwise, it protects the landlord if the tenant does something wrong.
If I might, the understanding then is of course, it makes sense what the actual policy says. But in my case, I wouldn't restrict the tenant to have to pick a certain company to buy their policy from that I was comfortable with. But it still would make such good sense for most tenants. It's so inexpensive to get it that I haven't had a problem having them pick up the insurance, except in one case, they just didn't do it. It wasn't an issue big enough to kick them out of the house either for not picking up the renter's insurance. So I just thought I'd ask, you know, what am I missing out as far as coverage?
Well, I mean, that's a great question, and you know, I own properties myself, so I have my own landlord insurance, so I'm not going to rely solely on the tenant. I'm going to, you know, obviously, and you do the same thing, protect yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I hope you do, because, yeah, you can have a provision in the lease that says they have to do it, but as you just said, sometimes they don't do it. Then what happens? Then you need your own policy.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. And as community service to everybody listening, I stumbled onto the idea that an inexpense of having about $10,000 of additional insurance, I think it was through State Farm, for very little money, for personal injury, should someone do slip and fall down the stairs kind of thing. And I'm like, for that little bit of money, yeah, let's have it. So I added that to my coverage. And I think as a landlord, that was an easy yes.
Yeah, I mean, your comment is well taken, because somebody might probably will make a claim. Yeah, absolutely.
Do we have a time for a different topic that's still about landlording?
We do, but we got a break coming. Can you hang with us on the other side of the break?
You bet.
All right, and we'll be glad to get you on another topic, so stick with us here a second. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, and then Bob Leonard of our law firm is here today. We're ready to answer your questions, 303-713-8255. We're here for you. We'll be right back.
This show is a legal advertisement, and it is intended to provide general information only. It is not intended to provide specific legal advice, nor does it create an attorney-client relationship. You should not rely on general legal information instead of specific legal advice regarding your specific circumstances. Follow-up contact does not create an attorney-client relationship and does not constitute legal advice.
Well, I'm gonna write a little
the local DJ. Good morning. Welcome back. Fasten your seatbelt. Here we go. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell here along with Bob Leonard of our law firm of Bell and Pollock. Ready to go for you. The telephone number is 303-713-8255. 713-8255. And you know, every Saturday from 10 to 11 on 850 AM KOA, we do our one hour Champions of the People injury show. We cover injury subjects, a different injury subject each week, and we cover it in detail, and we give you the information you need and want, even though if you don't know, you need and want it. Today, we're talking about, what if you're going down the road and you're hit by a farm tractor that's on the road, or they cause an accident? What happens? What are you going to do? What happens when you have an accident and you get out and this person gives you their insurance card and you find out it expired? What happens when you call up the insurance company but the insurance card didn't expire, but they say to you, well, that person who hit you, the person that rear-ended you, the person that T-bones you, I'm so sorry, they're an excluded driver on the policy. They shouldn't have even been driving. They're excluded. We don't cover that. What are you going to do when you're hit by somebody high on cocaine, high on marijuana, high on drugs, high on prescription drugs? Today's show, Champions of the People Injury Show, 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock, 850 KOA. You're going to find out those answers, and you're going to find out some enlightening tips on what you can do right now, today. So right before the break, we were talking to Don. Don, we talked about your tenant insurance. You got another issue?
Yeah, still real estate related, landlord-tenant situation. I've heard it suggested a property owner would likely want to have their rental house in and named in the LLC as the owner. Very common as an asset protection idea. I kind of wondered if the tenants have a contract to rent from an LLC and the LLC doesn't own any real estate. What exposure does that homeowner who rents their house to an LLC, maybe they're doing Airbnb or whatever they're doing, have as far as, does that add another layer of asset protection because it's not named in the hand of the LLC that owns the property? They own nothing, let's say.
Okay, so you got tenant. Let's just say Joe Jones is a tenant, right? And your question is the person that they lease from, their landlord, is named as an LLC, but the LLC doesn't exist.
Well, it exists. It just doesn't own any real estate. It just rents the real estate from some property owner.
Okay, so wow, you have some great questions. So this is obviously a very complicated question because, like, if there's liability for personal injury, then you go back and default to the Premises Liability Act in Colorado, and that deals with the definitions in that statute, and that deals with who owns the property, number one. So whoever owns the property, it's not the LLC, whoever owns the property is going to be a potential liable person or entity. Number two. You got the LLC renting the property out, but they don't really own the property, right?
Right, correct.
So they don't own it, but under the premises liability statute, it says a person who's in charge, who is and running the operation and running the place, is and can be and will be considered a property owner.
Okay.
And so they're not going to be able to dodge liability. So the real property owner, whoever that is going to be in the picture. The LLC, who doesn't own the property but runs it and manages it and is responsible for it, is in the picture. And then the LLC, as we know, limited liability company. They have limited liability. So, yes, they could be liable, but they have limited liability. And then you get into all kinds of questions about deeds because you got a bargain and sale deed, a quit claim deed, a warranty deed, a general warranty deed, a special warranty deed. And some of those have the concept of after-acquired interest, and a general warranty deed is one of those. So if I deed you property, Don, and I don't own it, and I give it to you, but I later acquire it, if it's a general warranty deed, then you own it anyway by my previous transfer. So all those issues then have to be analyzed and figured out.
Yeah, okay. So like I said, it's complicated, and if there was an incident, the renter would name the LLC and whoever was determined to be the actual owner of a property that there was an incident on. in both in a suit. They get both named, and the lawyers figure it out.
Correct. But also, if somebody's injured, let's say they're injured, the sidewalk wasn't taken care of, whatever, they were injured, they might maintain an action against the tenant, against the LLC who doesn't own it, against the real owner, all under the premises liability statute. And so what a question. But do you see how it gets analyzed?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yep. Thanks.
Thanks for your call, Don.
Yes. You bet. Catch you another time.
Okay. We appreciate it. You can give us a call at 303-713-8255. We love your calls right now. We're going to talk to Joe about a question about a will. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning. Hey, I was named in a will for a specific property, a car, and the friend of mine died. The will went to probate, and the court assigned a law firm to handle the estate. The law firm started to liquidate assets and sold the vehicle before they contacted me, and then they liquidated it through an auction. So then they contacted me and said, you were named to get the vehicle. We sold it, so you get the money, the proceeds that was obtained through the auction. Well, the value of the vehicle has been pretty well established in the marketplace. And as you know, most of the time when they go to auction, they go for less money than they're truly valued at. And they valued the vehicle or gave me want to give me a check for around $15,000, and the vehicle is around $40,000 in value. And what can I do to get the true value of the vehicle?
Okay. My goodness, you know, because so you're supposed to get the car, and I'm guessing the $15,000, I'm guessing, but I bet I'm right. I'm guessing that you're going to get the $15,000 is after expenses, after deductions, after attorney's fees, after, you know, it's like after tax, tip, and change. Thank you very much. And you don't get the car. And so
that's not true. They did show a copy of the check that they received, and they were going to give me the check for that exact amount.
Well, that makes me feel a lot better. So what do you think, Bob?
Well, I just want to know how they sold the asset without checking, reading the will. I mean, didn't they know that the asset was supposed to go to you?
Yes.
Well, what was their excuse for selling the vehicle?
They said they had to sell the vehicle because they didn't want to incur any additional storage costs until they located me with the vehicle. And then what was the other reason? That was pretty much it. And then I responded a couple times with the email questioning them of why didn't you contact me before you told it. And they just told me, well, they've done their fiscal responsibility.
You know, Gary, doesn't it sound like the law firm made a mistake and they have some responsibility to pay them the actual value of the vehicle?
Yeah, it sounds like they either made a mistake or ignored it, one or the other, but it doesn't matter which one it is, because the bottom line legal analysis for you, Joe, is you were to inherit the car under the will. You weren't to inherit a check for a lower value. You weren't to inherit the car. It becomes problematic when it's a special kind of car.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know, was this a special kind of car? I mean,
it's an older vehicle that is highly collectible nowadays, you know?
Yeah, because some people want the thing. They want the item. They want the car.
Correct.
Right.
That's why you were named in the will, because it was special to you.
Yeah, I mean, so your bottom line is you have a claim, okay, Joe? No, there's no question about it. Where do you go? You go to the attorneys who did this. That's where you go. And if you need help doing that, we'll help you. I mean, bottom line, you were supposed to get a car under your numbers worth $40,000. Maybe you just wanted the car. Maybe it was sentimental. Maybe it's a special car.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I just read in the news that the German police in Germany recovered a Maserati. Maybe it's a special car to that person. Maybe the same thing in Germany. Maybe to you. Right? Maybe it has sentimental value.
Correct.
Are any of those true?
Yeah, it's true.
Well, then they have a problem. That's where you go. You want some help?
Yeah.
All right. We'll be glad to help you. I'm going to put you on hold. Give Kevin your information, okay?
Okay.
All right, and let's get that roundup going and the rodeo going, heading your direction. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
I'm going to put you on hold, all right?
Okay.
All right, you're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Don't forget about our Champions of the People injury show today at 10 o'clock, 10 to 11, every Saturday. We're talking about insurance today, but we're talking about important subjects you've never heard us talk about before. What if you're hit by a farm tractor? What if there's an excluded driver? What if the driver of the car that hits you doesn't cooperate with their insurance company? What happens then? Listen today at 10 o'clock. We'll go over all of that. Bell and Pollock. We'll be right back. All right, here we go. Welcome back. Grab your legal bagel. Grab your legal coffee. We're going to talk to Eric over at Caitlin's. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
Good. What's cooking over there?
I got one more week of the specials we talked about last week. We are going to go with that breakfast special first. That is the Eggs Benedict that we serve with the baby spinach and the crab meat right there with that. So that's going to be on a toasted English muffin, that crab meat, that baby spinach, a couple poached eggs, a new kind of hollandaise sauce that we're trying out. We've got some really good reviews on that. That will be the breakfast special for the rest of the week, guys. And that lunch special we talked about was what I called the pepperoni grilled cheese sandwich. It comes with Texas toast, mozzarella, a little bit of marinara, the pepperonis on there. Of course, going to grill that up to a golden brown. Of course, you can get our homemade chips or our waffle cut fries on the side with that. That is that pepperoni grilled cheese sandwich. That is the lunch special for the rest of the week. And guys, every week, Monday through Friday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m., we do that early bird special. That early bird special comes with two eggs, those golden brown hash browns, your choice of ham, bacon, or sausage on that. Of course, you get the toast tortilla or pancake option as well. That's only $6.99. And again, those pancakes or buttermilk egg, don't forget that, guys. That's always really a good option to take on that breakfast special right there, that early bird special right there. Those are going to be the specials for the rest of the week, guys. The umbrellas are up. I just put them up myself. The weather looks like it's going to be a little bit chilly, but that sun's out. Should be great during noontime to come on down to Caitlin's and check us out. Crafts and mimosas, other scratch-made products on the menu as well. Tons of things to check out over here at Caitlin's Restaurant, guys.
All right, Eric, where are you located?
Guys, that's going to be 4379 East Mississippi Avenue. Now, that is in the Glendale Shopping Center, guys. There's one block east of Collar Boulevard, and that is the Glendale Shopping Center. Guys, come and check us out. You will love it, every by the way.
All right, Eric, thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys.
All right, you're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. This is the only show of its kind. And every Saturday from 10 to 11 on 850 AM KOA, we do our one-hour Champions of the People Injury Show. I mean, today's topics are just absolutely critical. If you're a pedestrian hit by a car, what happens? If you're on your bicycle hit by a car, what happens? If you're on your motorcycle, what happens? If you're in a truck accident and there's not enough insurance, what happens? What do you do? If you have no insurance but you're driving your car and you live with somebody and you didn't have UIM insurance but you live with somebody that's a relative, can you recover? Can you use their policies even though the insurance company never knew about you? What if you're hit by a drunk driver, a prescription abusive driver? A driver that has cocaine, high on cocaine, high on heroin, done them all. Farm tractor causes an accident. The insurance company says the driver who hits you is excluded from their coverage. What do you do? All that and more today on the Champions of the People Injury Show, 10 to 11 o'clock every Saturday. Right now we're going to talk to Carl from Castle Rock. Good morning, Carl.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Thanks for holding.
Yeah, sure. Appreciate your legal show. Just hopefully a simple question. I had a tenant that moved out May 1st. They didn't leave a forwarding address, and their mail continues to pile up in the cluster mailbox. I'm not sure what I should do with it.
Okay, so they left, but you're still in charge of the place. And what kind of mailbox? We have a locked mailbox, a regular mailbox?
Yeah.
What do we got?
Yeah, one of those locked cluster mailboxes. So I'm selling the house, and so I, with no forwarding address, do I just take those letters to the post office and tell them the tenant moved, and I don't know where or...
Okay, so you want the safe course of action, or you want the semi-safe course of action?
I'll take both.
You take all of the above.
You know, first thing, Gary, don't throw in any mail that's not addressed to you. That's a no-no. Right. If you see, you know, if you have misaddressed mail, just mark return to sender. That's one option.
Well, there's, at this point, there's probably 30 or 40 letters in there, but I can sure do that.
Well, okay, let's explore a couple more facts with you, Carl. How long they've been gone?
They moved out May 1st.
So the mail's accumulated, and the mail person just keeps putting it in there?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so the general rule is that the landlord doesn't have the right to go open the tenant's mailbox, a locked mailbox, and start rifling through it, okay?
Right.
Exceptions. It's just like somebody rents a storage unit and they don't pay and they leave all their stuff and they go goodbye.
All right,
so there's a statute that covers storage units. We're not going to get into that today. But so you have to take reasonable action. So the semi-safe way is to take the mail, take it back to the post office and tell them stop the mail delivery and these people leave no forwarding address. What do you do with the mail? If you do that, document what you do. If you do that, I would take pictures of the mail, take pictures of the mailbox and pictures of the mail so that you're not accused of doing anything, and then I would document that you took it back to the post office. The absolute safe, okay. The safest way is to contact the post office. Don't even touch the mail. They've got a key. They get in there, they deliver mail, then tell them this person left, they abandoned the property, there's no forwarding address, you don't know where to get them, and so you want this mail taken back by the post office. Okay?
Okay. Yeah, that's probably the safest, and I'd be happy to do it that way.
You got a safe way and a semi-safe way, but whatever you do, you make sure you document what you do. Everybody's got a camera on their phone. We can take pictures,
sure.
And all that stuff. So that's how you handle it.
Appreciate your help.
Thanks, Carl, thank you for the call. We really appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
All right, goodbye. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Don't forget about the show that follows our show. The Consumer Real Estate Show, we had that question earlier on LLCs and landlord tenants. I bet those guys know the answer. They know the answers to real estate contracts. They're very experienced. They hold boot camps. They hold seminars. You know, that show follows our show. Listen to them, Barry and Larry, the Consumer Real Estate Show. They usually, but not always, have a very informative guest on their show. Sometimes you're talking about HVAC. Sometimes you're talking about property inspections. Sometimes you're talking about land title issues. You know, how do you order what kind of a land title commitment should you get? Who should you get it from? What's an owner's extended coverage? These gentlemen know the answers to all of these questions. That's the show that follows our show. Right now, join us live here on KHOW is Jerry from Denver. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning.
Thank you for holding, and what can we do for you?
I live here in Denver. 10 days ago, just outside of Pinedale, Wyoming, I got my first speeding ticket in 30 years, passing on a two-lane highway. I was clocked at 92 and a 70, and I pulled over. The officer wrote me a ticket and went on down the road. It took less than 5 minutes. And I normally drive on cruise control at 68 miles an hour. I'm a 72-year-old Vietnam vet with a disability. So just to take it easy, I don't fight the traffic. But 3 to 5 seconds, I drive a big truck, and I guess I wasn't paying attention. He said you cannot drive faster than 10 miles over the speed limit when you're passing. So are there any options? Because this is going to raise my insurance. I've been reading up on it. You know, this is going to cost at least $1,500 in insurance, I think. The ticket was $155. Do I have any options?
Okay, so, let's analyze that. You're driving down the road. You're trying to pass another vehicle on a two-lane road, right?
Yes.
And to do that, you've got to speed, correct?
Yes.
Happens to everybody. And was this a state, Colorado State Trooper?
No, this was a Wyoming, just west of Pinedale.
I'm so sorry you said that. Wyoming State Trooper?
Yes.
Okay, and they said to you that they'll give you 10 miles an hour over, okay?
Right.
All right, well, I don't know of any 10 mile an hour over rule. But I do know that the driving manual and the driving regulations say that you must drive appropriate for conditions, okay? So I think, and the police officers I've talked to over the years, most of them will give you 10 miles an hour sort of as an implied, unwritten, between the lines, free pass. But sometimes you have to go more than 10 miles an hour with the speed limit to get around who you're trying to get around.
Right.
Right. So your options are probably you were speeding. Your options are you're a Vietnam vet. Thank you for that. You're disabled. I'm so sorry. And I'm sure you served your country well. So I would go to court, explain the situation. if you're the judge, and you know, Bob, what do you think? If you're the judge and you're listening to Jerry, and listen, I'm a Vietnam vet. I'm 72 years old. I drive carefully. I had to pass this person. Nobody was in danger. Nobody got injured. I had to do this. Yes, I did. And so I'm asking for a reduction or the ticket to go away.
I think, like you said, you should go in front of the judge. I mean, we know it's dangerous to pass on a two-lane road, but you have to, you know, if the car is impeding traffic, that itself is a dangerous situation. Someone's driving too slow for the situation. I think, you know, you have to move around this car as fast as you possibly can. You don't be stuck out there in the opposite lane of traffic with cars coming at you. So by necessity, you may have to speed, go more than 10 miles above.
But the bottom line, Jerry, is you got a speeding ticket and you were speeding, okay?
Right.
Yes, it happened. And the police officer, I think when they said they'll give you 10 miles an hour over, that's kind of an implied, unwritten rule. Because I don't know of a statute or an ordinance that provides that, but I do know police officers that do that. I've talked to them. So I would go down. I would try to get the ticket reduced, plea bargained. And you don't need an attorney to do this. You don't need a lawyer. You can do it yourself. And you tell them this is a situation. But most important to the judge and the DA or the city attorney is nobody was injured. Nobody was put in danger.
You know, unless, were you in an area where there's signs saying that passing wasn't allowed? Or was this an area we had a lot of distance? You could see far off into the distance, see no vehicles were coming? As long as you put anybody in risk, I don't think it's really a big issue.
Was anybody put at risk, Jerry?
No, but the State Patrol guy's driving a little black Camaro, and it was a little bit cloudy, so he was a mile or two down the road coming my direction.
Well, the opposite direction. Listen, we got a break. Can you hang with us till after the break? I got a couple more things to say to you, okay?
Sure.
Okay, we appreciate your call, so hang on. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Bell and Pollack Legal Show. I'm Gary Bell, along with Bob Leonard of the law firm of Bell and Pollack. We're here for you. Today, 10 to 11, our Champions of the People injury show. What happens when you have an accident and there was no contact between two vehicles? What happens when there's no driver's license and the person that hits you? All that today, 10 to 11, 850 KOA, because we are your Champions of the People. We'll be right back. Go. The Bell and Pollack Legal Show. I'm Gary Bell, along with Bob Leonard of our law firm, Bell and Pollack. This show is for you, 303-713-8255. We designed it that way. Brad and I formed our law firm in 1984 with the vision and mission of helping injured victims and their families put their lives back together again. And wow, over the years, we learned time and time again, people don't have the information they need. They don't know at the beginning what to do, and it is very sad, especially when somebody comes to us and they say, you know, my accident happened a year ago, and we say, well, what did you do about this, and it wasn't done right. So if you have the information, that's why we do the shows. Then it morphed into this show. Why don't we help people on every subject, even though we're injury attorneys? And that was years ago, and we're still doing it. And we do our one-hour Champions of the People injury show every Saturday from 10 to 11. So welcome to all of our listeners. Welcome back, Jerry. Are you still with us?
Yes.
Okay, Jerry was passing on a two-lane highway in Wyoming. The trooper was driving a black Camaro, coming at him, pulled him over, said he was speeding, gave him a ticket. And during the break, Jerry, I found the statute in Wyoming. It's 31-5-203. And it says, I don't know one of them in Colorado, but it says that if it's a two-lane road, and you have to pass this person, then you do have the 10 miles an hour as a grace speed as a forgiveness speed. So there is a statute in Wyoming. It says it does not apply to a construction zone. That makes sense. And it says if you exceed the 10 miles an hour to pass, then you're going to be held responsible and liable for the full speed. Doesn't matter. So if you're going 85, you don't subtract the 10 miles an hour from the 85 and get to 75. So what you're going to do is what we were talking about before. You're going to go to the court, the city attorney, and you're going to ask for a plea bargain. You ask for reduced charges, and you're going to explain to them that nobody was what? Injured? Nobody was in danger? Bob, what do you think?
As long as there was no one in danger, you were in an area of the highway where passing is allowed and you had enough vision, you know, you can see down the road, I think you were in a safe place to pass the vehicle, the slower moving traffic. But Gary, you know, we're talking 5 miles an hour difference between 10 and 15. I don't know how a trooper coming the other direction can say, hey, you're going 15 over versus 10 over.
Well, I'd love to hear from law enforcement, because I think they've got the radar these days. It doesn't matter where they are. They don't have to be, right, Jerry?
Yeah, he said, I have you on radar at 92, and the ticket was 315-301. BVII2, whatever that means.
Well, I'd love to ask you on the air, but I'm not going to. You're not going to give me the answer. I'd love to ask you if you're really doing 92, but don't answer that here, okay? All right, we're not going to be talking about that on the air. But you've got a situation where you've got to explain to the judge if you weren't going 92. You got to say I was not going 92. He was coming at me. You know, so sorry about that, but nobody was in danger. I had to get around this vehicle as quickly as possible. I was not passing in a no-passing zone. There was no construction zone. I didn't injure anybody. There was no accident, and I got back in the right-hand lane as soon as practicable, and I don't drive that way. I had to get past this vehicle. Does any of that make sense, Jerry?
Yeah, and I didn't know I was going 92. I just wanted to get past the vehicle and get it, you know, get the stress off me.
What was the weather like? Was it nighttime?
I paid the ticket by June the 6th, and I'm going to be going through there probably July the 12th again in Pinedale. And so you say drive up there and be there at 10 a.m. for the court date, June the 6th on the ticket.
Absolutely. I mean, you don't become a no-show. Absolutely, you show up. Show up early. Ask to speak to the either the prosecutor, the city attorney, or district attorney, and explain your situation.
Can you call the prosecutor? Can I call him and talk to him now, or do I? I do have to drive. That's a 7-hour drive.
Yes, you can. They're probably not going to speak to you on the phone, probably not, but you'll be able to speak to a court person, and I would say to them, you know, what's the best way to handle this? Many times the court personnel, they can't give legal advice, but they know the procedures, and they can give you options on which procedure you want to choose. They can't advise you what to do, but yeah, I would do that. If you got to drive 7 hours to get there, that's exactly what I would do.
Okay.
You know, many times in these small towns these days or whatever they have, they say you can get online, you can get on the internet, and you can do it on the internet. You can enter into the plea bargain on the internet. And I know there's a new computer software that's already available, mostly on the East Coast, that handles this kind of stuff. But if you call the court, Jerry, speak to the clerk. You're going to get somebody on the phone. Tell them I got a speeding ticket. Is there another way that I can handle this ticket other than showing up in person?
Okay. Because it's a great little community, Pinedale. I go through there every so often. And I will be going to Yellowstone Park in July. So I'll probably have to stay there the night of the 12th of July. So,
well, that's a long trip to get that done. Bobby, any other suggestions here?
Well, Jerry, with the ticket, is there anything on the back of the ticket that talks about the plea bargain, that they automatically will reduce the ticket to something less than, you know, was it a six-point ticket? How many points was it?
Well, it's 6 points in Colorado, but Wyoming doesn't have a point system, and I've read also it can raise my insurance 30 to 92%. For 3 to 5 years, and that's the killer.
That's the killer. So, I would try to get it reduced as much as possible. If it requires an in-person appearance, then you show up, okay?
Okay.
And it might be important on a 6-point ticket you show up anyway. Maybe if I'm the judge, I want to see you. I want to measure you. I want to know who you are. I want to know what the situation was about, right?
All right.
And also, I wouldn't even put it past advising you just to go to the DA and say, I want 0 points on my ticket. But I want you to give Kevin your information. I got some more to tell you on the phone, and we'll contact you, okay?
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. The Bell & Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. Gary Bell, Bob Leonard. Our law firm is Bell & Pollock. We are your champions of the people. Our website is championsofthepeople.com. All of our books are there. They're free. When you call the show, it's free. When we refer you to an attorney, it's free. Today at 10 o'clock on 850 KOA AM, we've got our Champions of the People injury show. And we got all kinds of interesting subjects, which I tried to highlight today for you. If you want to contact us, championsofthepeople.com, because we are your champions of the people. See you next week.